All right, you're back in the DFSR here with an MLB podcast for Friday, August 17th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Here to get you started, keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings. We have optimal lineups for FanDuel and FanDuel and DraftKings MLB, NFL. We have our week one already. Lineups are kind of trickling in here. I'm saying trickling in because we're just kind of fiddling with projections. Those things are far from being set. Still many weeks away. We have NBA, NHL, all of it covered under one subscription package. You don't need to section it off by provider or, you know, site or who wrote the article, or so, like some sites do. We have it up on the site. It's all covered in the one subscription package, so go check it out. DFSR.com/MLB. We'll get you started. I'm assuming that's probably going to be DFSR.com/NFL soon enough. So we had a couple days off. We've had a weird podcasting schedule in the short term. We just had a lot of conflicts in terms of time. When you run a small business like this and you do all the stuff, that's what sometimes happens. So we're back here Friday. We'll be back again for sure next week. I know we said we were going to have an NFL podcast this week. That'll probably be a little bit delayed till next week. Luckily, those week one prices won't change at all. So it'll still be pretty much the same conversation. And we have another sort of week of information because there was a bunch of preseason games last night. All right, I'm done with my spiel. Buddy, how are you doing? It's been a long week, I know. Are you ready to talk baseball? We think we get there. It was an interesting day of games here. Rate your mood, 1 to 10.
I'm going to say, well, this is tricky because it's always hard to go back and like remember all the great times you have. I'm going to go ahead and say never better, with the caveat that if someone comes and shows me a video from some other time in my life, that I'm prepared to be proven wrong. So that's what I'm coming in this podcast with today. That's the energy I'm bringing. But, you know, that could just be me not having a great long-term memory here.
I don't even understand if that was a good or a bad thing. All right, doesn't matter. All right, here we go.
Never better? Never better means good.
Never better.
If the listeners are also, you know, confused as well. Never better is a saying here in the U.S. that means like, yeah, no, I'm doing well.
Gotcha. For some reason, it didn't click with me, the never better part. Okay. Friday in baseball, wrote up the picks last night. Some interesting plays here. You know, one thing that just continues to be a late season just theme with just about, specifically FanDuel, but I guess DraftKings as well, is that when you get to this part of the season and you have known quantities, some of them, like, and again, I'm really talking more about FanDuel, just does not price the known quantities that are the safest, best plays costly enough to like avoid them as far as I'm concerned in cash games. We saw this the other day with Gerrit Cole. He was like 10-5 against the Rockies or something like that on FanDuel, yep. Which is a ridiculously stupid price.
Not for a course.
Yeah, like that's what I mean. Like ridiculously stupid price for a team that's terrible against right-handed hitting, for a pitcher who's been, you know, arguably a top five, this top eight pitcher this season. Now, it's not as egregious here with Scherzer today, but Scherzer still at 12,000 or 12-2 against the Marlins. It's not even close. I get that it's a lot of money, and I get that you have to take a hit on your salary cap to do it. And I mean, I can make one small case for someone right below him, but I mean, does this seem anything like a fair price to you? Like, I feel like at 13,000, I'd still probably be playing him, maybe even a little bit more, just considering how good he's been.
Yeah, no, it doesn't seem like a reasonable price for him whatsoever. -300 favorite. Obviously, like, you know, we've talked about it literally every time he's pitched because these sites refuse to create pricing parity where you have to make hard decisions. So you've just heard Max Scherzer's stats a number of times throughout the season at this point. But the guy does basically everything well. I mean, the only knock against him, I mean, we're now on like 300 straight innings of 12 Ks per nine and 2 walks per nine. So that's really, really good. The only knock against him would be his low ground ball rate. But the thing is, his stuff is so nasty that doesn't really translate into the home runs that you would imagine. It actually just translates. He gets all the good parts about fly balls, super, super low BABIP. Now in his third straight year of 255 or less BABIP, just crazy. But none of the bad parts, like the home runs. So yeah, he's super safe, incredibly high upside. The price is too low. It's just, you know, if you hear boredom in my voice, it's because what's the point of just having a guy that you have to play every time he pitches? It's just kind of crazy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, he's basically maybe not 100% lock, but he's a far and away front runner for Cy Young in the NL. So I think he probably gets there. He's got the wins to back it up, which is like the other stupid thing. I don't really care personally about it, but the 15 wins help his case with the last bastion of voters that still don't understand that that's a worthless stat. But yeah, so like he. Oh, what was I going to say? So, right. So, the numbers that he puts up are just so ridiculous. The Marlins are one of the worst teams in baseball against righty pitching. You said he's a minus 300 favorite. He actually opened at minus 375. It's actually come down to minus 355. It doesn't matter. This is just a ridiculous win expectation line. One of the highest of the seasons. But the minus 375, very few games had opened higher than that this year. There was a couple like minus 390s, minus
4. I saw minus 4.
Yeah, there was. Like Severino opened at minus 4, and then I think Sale might have opened at minus 400.
It was Sale.
The other day. So, and he backed it up. But yeah, you rarely get into this kind of win expectation. Now, okay, so I think we pretty much agree he's number one kind of by a lot. But I will say Carlos Carrasco does at least make things interesting. Carrasco, I'd much rather play Scherzer, so I want to caveat by saying that I'm not really comparing them one to the other. But Carrasco comes in with a lot of the same checks a lot of the same boxes here as Scherzer. He's actually at right now a better money line favorite at 365 minus 365.
Yeah, well, I wrote these guys were pitching like kind of opposing each other the last time I wrote the picks, and I said the same thing. I think he's a Scherzer light. Basically, it's fewer strikeouts, fewer walks. The consistency is there, almost the same number of innings. Like then he went out and completely ruined the White Sox last time he went out there. 7 innings, no walks, 9 Ks, no earned runs. Like. Yeah, the guy's a machine.
I think you will see some people talk themselves into it. I think it's not the worst decision in the world to do it either. I think you take some hit on expectations. You're paying $1,200 less on FanDuel for him. On DraftKings, it's something in the same range. You're paying $1,400 less on DraftKings. So you're looking at 12 to 14% decrease in price, and that matters. And it's like the difference between a punt bat and a mid-tier bat or something like that. I know it's usually not as binary a decision like that because you can spread the money out. But I think that... sometimes I'll say, oh my God, there's like nights where I'm like, if it's Scherzer and like, let's say the next closest guy was Charlie Morton. Let's say Carrasco was on every other pitcher on this list was here except for Carrasco. And it was like, oh my God, if you like talk yourselves into Charlie Morton at 10-1 over Scherzer, like then I think you're nuts. And that's like the time where I'm like, every percentage that doesn't have Scherzer in cash games to me, I think took a really pretty big hit on expectation going in. I don't feel exactly the same way with Carrasco. If I saw people start a Carrasco in cash games, I personally wouldn't, but I wouldn't like make fun of them or anything like that. So I might.
I think it's pretty close. Yeah, it's close to a situation where you would want to make fun of someone. I think like on DraftKings, it's 3 points off. That's not super super great. On FanDuel right now, the top lineup is 6 points off.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yikes! That's a yikes for me, Doc Randy right. Jackson. So I don't think you go there for cash, but for big tournaments like. The thing about Scherzer is he's still just a human being who can occasionally be bad, and you definitely don't need to play him from big tournaments. And I think normally you don't want to hedge away from a guy like Scherzer for big tournaments just because not only he's often the safest pitcher, but he oftentimes just has by far the most upside, like comically high upside on a points per dollar basis. But Carrasco has that too. It's been 5 games since he has had fewer than 8 Ks in a game. So plenty of upside here. If Scherzer does have one of his off nights, Carrasco's the guy you want. So I think you get him a really low ownership percentage for big tournaments, and I think you can get paid there.
Yeah, I think you're right. Scherzer, just in terms of upside, he had a run early in the season, 15, 11, 13, then he had a bad game, 4, and then 12 and 13 strikeouts. So that was a 5 out of 6 game run where he went 11 strikeouts or more and went 8 innings and 2 of them, 7 innings and 2 of them. Like, he's just a beast. The strikeouts... I guess if you're going to make a case, I've dipped down a little bit over the second half of this. Never mind. 11, 10, 6, 11 in the last 4 games. The guy's just a monster. I don't know. Whatever. I don't need to keep making the case for him. So
good player.
So those two guys I think are pitcher 1, and then we'll just call it 2. I was going to say 1A, but we'll just say 1 and 2. After those two guys, if you're talking on DraftKings, you're going to need to pair. Let's say you just choose one of the two. And I think it'd be nuts to fade both in cash on DraftKings. So I'm not even suggesting you do this. Pairing him pairing one of these two guys, in our case it'll be Scherzer, with a starting pitcher too. Is there a guy that saves you enough money that has enough upside here? I mean, the system likes Robbie Ray at 7,600. I can speak to why I'm questioning that. I have a couple other guys on the list too. But I mean, what are your thoughts on Ray? Or is there another guy that maybe stands out above him in terms of just points per dollar expectation?
Well, I mean, if you're talking upside, I think Ray is clearly the play, right? I mean, to get a guy with 11.5 Ks per nine for 7,600 is just not an opportunity you're going to have very often. Ray certainly has his issues. Like, the walks are still through the roof, really preventing him from becoming a top-tier pitcher. But, if you look at basically, let's see here. So you just start when he came back from injury on July 27th, right? Only one game did he go fewer than five innings. Now, that's not like high praise necessarily, but when you're in that pitcher two slot, we've kissed a lot of frogs in the pitcher two slot on DraftKings.
You have to. Everyone does. You have to. There's no way. There's simply no way around it. Right.
There's certainly like a couple blow-up starts in there too. You know, like his start against Colorado on July 20th. That was a disaster, right? Five runs allowed, six runs allowed against St. Louis. This will happen to Ray from time to time. But you're also getting a guy who can just go out there and get you 8Ks, get you 6Ks. You know, he's going to have... It's hard to say that he has a high floor just because the walks make it really hard to have a high floor. It means he can't go super deep into games and you're just going to be trying to pitch out of trouble all the time. But he's also sort of qualified for that. So I think you also, if you stack him up against some of the other options here, like I don't... Like I think the worst thing you could do... Like, so people are really good at thinking about, okay, well, this is the downside of a guy like Robbie Ray. I just don't want the volatility, right? They're like, who else is in this range? Oh, Sean Newcomb's 500 less. I got bad news. Sean Newcomb also walks more than four guys per nine, right? He just, like, people don't focus on him as much because he just doesn't have the same K upside, so people play him less often. And so I don't care that Newcomb has a lower ERA. The XFIP on RIP, they should call Robbie Ray RIP. That's an awesome thing. The XFIP on Ray is just dramatically lower. I mean, 378 is just a flat-out good XFIP. So I'm going to play Ray over guys like Newcomb any day. I don't think you're really in a position where you can go double expensive. Like, I don't think you can go Scherzer and Morton or Scherzer and Carrasco.
No.
So I think that's just going to leave you... I don't know. Are there other guys in that mid-tier that you're liking?
Yeah, there's one other guy. I'll get to him in a second. There is, but I'm gonna just go on your theme of just when you kind of compare apples to apples guys that are in sort of the same price ranges, right? Like Freddie Peralta is there too at 8,000. So if you look at, you know, ways that you need to kind of just gear projections, one, Freddie Peralta is an underdog, so for GBPs that doesn't matter as much because you're the win is binary. We've talked about that a lot, but he's an underdog going in at St. Louis. Significantly worse matchup against the Cardinals than Ray is getting against the Padres. Peralta also walks the ballpark too. He's walking more than five batters per nine. Like he's in that 11.8K per nine guy, but he has the same sort of issues as Ray as well. So I think if you're looking at this group of guys that are all sort of the same, or when we're talking about the big upside strikeout guys, they all have their same problems. And I think Newcomb's actually, his strikeouts have really kind of dropped off a cliff in the short term too. A lot of the strikeout numbers were built on what he was doing earlier in the season. One other guy I can make a slight case for, and I'm wondering your opinion about him, because we've thought much different about this guy in the past, is Kyle Gibson. So Kyle Gibson is a little bit more than Ray. He's 900 more than Ray on DraftKings. Now, he's projected, for us, our projection system, he's projected for, I don't know, I'm going to call it significantly less points, 2.5, sure. Something like 2.5 less points. But, so here's the hard thing I have with a guy like Gibson. Gibson, for a long time, sucked. He was a high XFIP guy, a high ERA guy. The guy could not strike a batter out. Like, he went through two seasons of 5 strikeouts per nine, a 6 strikeout per nine, ticked it up to 7 strikeouts per nine, and now it's up to 8.5 strikeouts per nine this season, over 147 innings. So I'm starting to call this, like, something that I want to pay attention to, right? Like, he's 147 innings of sort of maintaining around this K number is making me feel like I at least want to, like, look and see what, like, possibly could be the thing. Like, is he throwing different pitches? He is. He's throwing the fastball much more than he ever has in the past. And actually, this coincides with this slight uptick in strikeouts from last year as well. So he'd thrown the fastball basically less than, and sometimes significantly less than 20% of the time until last year. He ticked up to 22%, and now is up to 25, probably closing in on 26%. So I would say rather dramatic uptick in the amount of fastballs he throws. Is getting rid of the changeup slowly, which doesn't seem like a plus pitch for him. He's turned himself into fastball, sinker, slider. And with it has come more strikeouts, 8.5 strikeouts per nine. I have not gone all the way there in the projection, but he's a big money. I mean, and this actually speaks a lot of volumes too. He's a big money line favorite at -170 for a Twins team that sucks, right? Like, so,
yeah.
I don't know. Can you talk yourself into, like, there's part of me in some ways that feels like he's might be even like a little safer than Ray without the same upside. And the other thing about Gibson in the past, extreme ground ball guy. One of the reasons he was able to just stick around in the majors, sure, is that even when he's not striking this many guys out, he was still like a 50% of the time, 50% or higher ground ball guy. He's given up some of it. I mean, have I made enough of a case for a guy like Kyle Gibson? It's a little bit more. I don't know, but strikes me as maybe a guy that can maybe stick around a little bit longer in the game. Same win expectation. Very good matchup against the Tigers, who I think actually do rate the worst in the league against righties.
Yeah, I mean, he just faced the Tigers in his last start, and he went 7 innings, gave up just one run, struck out just 4 batters. There are some warning signs with Gibson, I think. This is just arbitrary endpoint city here, but if you go by these first half, second half stats, his xFIP is, you know, almost at 5 for the second half. It's only 31 innings, you know, compared to the other innings. It's been a tougher row for him recently. You know, some of that could be matchup driven, to back-to-back matchups against Cleveland, where he did pretty poorly. He had a matchup at Boston before that where he was actually pretty good. So, you know, there's reason for I think there's reason for optimism for Gibson going forward. And of course, you know, Gibson was a pretty big prospect when he came up. I guess the issue I have with Gibson, and by the way, we're in the apples to apples territory if you're just comparing him against Robbie Ray. Like, I think he's a safer play, probably, just in an absolute sense, before we start considering price, with the matchup here, with his ability to go deep into games. I guess I just want to, like, help people understand that Gibson is no longer a prospect. Like, he's 30 years old. He is what he is, for the most part. So you could see some marginal gains here and there, but I have a hard time believing that he's going to, like, turn into some kind of brand new pitcher, given, you know, his historical track record of just simply not being very good. I think the K's, I would be concerned that the K's would continue to follow, and that's what he really needs in order to sustain the, you know, fairly modest 0.4 dip in his xFIP this season. One thing about Gibson this year compared to last is the ERA. So last year he was unlucky with ERA. He had an ERA over 5 with a 4.35 xFIP. This year he's been a half a run lucky at 3.49 with a 3.91 xFIP. That's one of those... ERA isn't a great predictor of future, like, runs allowed per inning, but it can be a fairly good... Like, if you look at it from a, you know, a retroactive or back-facing way, that can explain some of the reason he's able to go deeper into games. Like, if you just run bad on ERA...
Yeah.
You're going to get pulled from games earlier just because that's how managers think. So if his ERA comes back up in line to what his probably natural xFIP is, I think you see some of those innings shut off as well. All that being said, there's a long analysis on Kyle Gibson. I think he is totally playable tonight. I think if you're too scared by Ray, because you're just like a scaredy cat who gets scared all the time, then I think Gibson is a pretty reasonable play. Just know that our system thinks Ray is 2.5 points better for 900 less. So our system is just going to have Ray in there, and nothing is going to happen that's going to get Gibson into the overall top lineup, I don't think.
And that's because, and this will be the final point on this, because that's mostly because strikeouts are just so important. That's really what it comes down to. Strikeouts are just
right. In real life baseball, strikeouts aren't as important as they are in fantasy.
Oh, they're just so important in fantasy, right? Like, they're just so, and if you just strike out, I don't know, 40% more batters than the guy behind you, then that's going to be the big difference. One other guy I wanted to throw out there before we get into some stacks, Brian Johnson has been decent enough, and I'm throwing him out there because he's also a big... I could see him getting some ownership tonight. He's a big money line favorite. He is only 6,800, so he's actually a thousand less than Ray. All right, well, 800 less than Ray, and gets a Tampa Bay team that's not all that good. Now, he skipped a start. He went 7 innings against Toronto, but then actually came out of the bullpen for the next game. But he had a run of enough pitches to kind of warrant a play here. Like, he's not just like one of these converted relievers. He had been a starter for, I don't know, 7 or 8 games straight to drive the pitch count up. And he's just a little bit cheaper. He's definitely worse than the two guys, but he's also just cheaper than, with a bit more win expectation. Actually, his numbers aren't... I take that back. His numbers actually aren't all that dissimilar to Kyle Gibson's on the season. So he's similar to Gibson. I'd be a little bit worried he could go as long into the game, but just another guy to throw out there. All right, let's get to some stacks in a second. Hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, we'll talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor is a great place to go as we're gearing up for this football season. I know they've got a ton of great free rolls lined up. They're actually even helping us write some content for this year, which is kind of exciting. The guys at Fantasy Factor just really know their stuff. They really care about their customers. And what they've created is a place where more casual players can go and not worry about getting thrown into the meat grinder with all these sharks that are getting ready to put 500 lineups in for the Sunday millions and so forth on FanDuel and DraftKings. So I really like Fantasy Factor. I really trust those guys. They've been with us a long time. So go check them out, fantasyfactor.com.
All right, we talked about some of the good pitchers, but you'll notice we only talked about 4 or 5 of them going into this, which for a full slate of games means that there are plenty of bums hitting the mound today, which is actually good because when there's this many bad pitchers going, I mean, some of them do face bad offenses, but I think some of the bad offenses are going to win out in terms of price, and I kind of kept that as a theme when I was writing other picks last night because I wanted to be, you know, honest about if I wrote up Scherzer and Carrasco and one other guy, you can't just go out and play Lindor and Jose Ramirez and Bryce Harper and all these other guys.
You're nothing if not honest, dude.
I'm a very honest guy, and everyone knows this. We've talked about this before on the podcast. Incredibly honest. I've raised an honest kid, and we're just all honest all around. So we get into a situation where, I tried personally to focus on some of the cheaper guys. I think there is a chance we can maybe slot in some expensive guy here and there simply because there are a lot of punt plays. Where do you think you see us starting in terms of, cash game stacks? Is there one? Do you see it more as a one-off kind of night? I have some names here, or do you want to just kind of focus on some of these bad pitchers? Because there are a hell of a lot of them going here.
You know, it's kind of funny. So we recently updated our tool. I don't know if you've bragged about that on the podcast before, we recently upgraded our tool to allow for player limiting. So, which means that if you go in there and you're like, okay, I get the Scherzer's the best play, it's fine to see him in the top lineup, but I just don't need to see 50 Max Scherzer lineups. You just put a one there and then you can see everything else. So what I did actually today was just give all the pitchers a limit of one just to try to get a sense for, who the good bats were or what kind of bats you would play depending on how things fit in. And fiddling with that actually gave me a pretty good picture of where our system's going in terms of the guys you're actually going to play. So the Red Sox are going up against Ryan Stanek and company, whoever else winds up pitching for the Rays tonight. But you're probably not going to be able to play all the Red Sox guys alongside Max Scherzer if you want to do that. But it did give me a pretty good picture of plays that you're actually going to be able to make. As always, I try to start my stacks start my big tournament lineups by just finding the very worst pitchers. And, sometimes they're up against good teams, sometimes they're up against bad teams, but we definitely have some really, really bad pitchers tonight. Preamble over, the worst pitcher on the slate, arguably the worst pitcher in the whole major leagues, is David Hess. This guy, it's pretty insane. I mean, to have pitched 59 innings, allowing more than 2 home runs per 9 innings, is a really, really tough thing to pull off. And he does that by A, not striking anyone out, B, just like walking guys a ton, an indicator that he doesn't know where the ball's going, never generating a ground ball, 32% ground ball rate. And he's running a little bad. The 6.25 ERA doesn't quite match the 6.09 xFIP. Yep, he's north of 6 right now. But going up against a Cleveland team, they should really put a beating on this guy. Now, again, the interesting thing is if you're running Scherzer, it's going to be hard to stack Cleveland guys alongside of him. But especially on DraftKings, if you're running, say, Carlos Carrasco in that pitcher one slot, you can start to fit in a serious number of Indians. So I think that, David Hess is going to have to be on everyone's radar if you're playing big tournaments tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the cases, especially for tournaments, for going sort of double mid-tier for pitcher and trying to fade the Scherzer and Carrasco spot. Because if you're looking at extreme upside, this Indians team has it. They have, two guys basically that are going to be in the MVP talk. I wonder and it's going to be interesting to see if they sort of cannibalize with the voters some of the votes. And that's Lindor and Jose Ramirez, who just put up just completely, completely ridiculous seasons. Jose Ramirez especially has been, it's like kind of unreal what he's doing. He's going to be like a 40-30 guy probably by the time it's all said and done. And they're very expensive. Now, right now, it does have, I think it had actually, we were playing, our system had Lindor at shortstop on FanDuel. That's like the one guy to pay up for. So I think you are going to be in a situation where you can maybe just pay up for one guy. But I'm totally on you about Hess. This guy is just complete and utter garbage. It's really just the state of the Orioles pitching staff at this point. The guys that are left, they traded Gausman. This pitching staff was bad to begin with, and they traded off Gausman. I thought they traded someone else too, and I'm just blanking on who it was. Dylan Bundy's still there. I can't remember. Anyway, they've had a bad pitching staff for a while. This is just guys. He just fits right in with the rest of them, and he might be the worst of the bunch. I'm wondering one other team that's kind of coming in here in terms of the mid-tier pricing are the Reds. So right now we have Votto at 3,300. I'm on FanDuel right now. Votto at 3,300 and Scooter Gennett at 3,000 against, I think, Casey Kelly. I'm getting a little confused because there's so many bad pitchers going here that I'm – yeah, great. Casey Kelly in Cincinnati. So great ballpark. Casey Kelly is another one of these guys, has not pitched at one point, was a big prospect. That those days are long since gone. I mean, I'm looking back to where he was. Yeah, back in the Red Sox days, I think they traded him for Adrian Gonzalez in that huge trade, and then he's kind of just plotted along and never turned into anything. Now he's had 6 innings this season, striking out less than 4.5 batters per 9. He's bad. But what are your thoughts on Votto? Votto's power is gone this season. 500 plate appearances, he's got 9 home runs, so he hasn't even hit double digit home runs. Still walks more than he strikes out, which he's doing less walking and more striking out than he was last year, but still a good sign. What are your thoughts on the power? Do you think it's a run bad situation here? The hard contact rate is actually the highest of his career, or the highest of the last 5 years. Are we looking at a run bad situation in terms of the power and the home run, the fly ball, which is down to 9%? Is he a guy that you'd be still comfortable playing in cash? Because when you look at 510 at-bats of less than 10 home runs for a guy who'd been, you know, an elite hitter, is he still a guy that you feel comfortable playing based on sort of the other numbers he throws out there?
Yeah, I mean, so obviously it's all based on price. Votto is pretty clearly not like the $4,800 player he was last year. So I think we can, you know, cross that off the list. But at $3,200, you don't really need to be that good in right. order to sustain that price. And, you know, a guy whose approach is that solid, where he's walking more than he's striking out, he's going to be getting on base a ton. Going up against a guy like Casey Kelly, who, I mean, Casey Kelly has been garbage in the minors. I just don't totally understand this line. I think it should be a little bit higher. Right now it's at 9, and it's basically a pick 'em.
No, it's down to 8.5. This is going the wrong direction.
Oh, is it going down? So the site I'm looking at says 9. But the, yeah, going in the, I just don't get it. I mean,
me neither.
130 innings in the minors this year, 4.71 xFIP. Like, what is?
No, I take it back. Sorry, it's up. I refresh. It's up to 9.5. So it's actually it started.
Yeah,
8.5,
okay, so it's heading in the 9. Right direction. Right, yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, he's only come into the games twice this season. Neither was a start. Was, you know, got out of some innings with a low ERA, but again, 4 Ks per 9, 2.8 walks per 9. This guy's trash. I think Votto should be able to handle him pretty well here. I think Scooter Jeanette's showing up in lineups right now, too. I think Votto's totally playable. I think the hard contact, basically the prices on Votto for both sites, I think have totally adjusted for the power being what it is for this season. I still think, even if Votto has lost some of his power, with that much hard contact and just that approach and that body that he carries around, like, it's going to be hard for him to be a true talent 13 home run guy or whatever for a whole season, right? So even if he's now just a 20 home run guy for this season, he'll still have been running bad. So I like Votto today. I think he's still a value. Like we've said many, many, many times, countless times, now are the times where you get discounts on guys, right? Like these prolonged, you know, the random reverse lottery. He's hitting the warning track. He's slashing line drives over the place. They're finding gloves, whatever the heck is going on with Votto. If he has 2 home runs in a week, he's going to be 4,500 on FanDuel again. So I think now is the time to buy on Votto, and I feel totally comfortable doing it.
Yep. I think he's a fantastic price on FanDuel. I don't see a ton of reason to get away from him. I'm still very much buying on the player profile that he has, just in looking at, you know, ground ball rates and everything. Nothing here is a concern for me at all. Okay, give us some more pitchers that we can maybe... Oh, real quick, I want to say a one-off going the other way. I love Brandon Belt's price on FanDuel, just because they continue to do this thing where if you've been on the DL for a while, we saw this with Tommy Pham. We see it was really every single guy.
What was that Belt's old site? I feel like we had like a site that advertised with us.
Oh, Draftster. Yeah, Draftster.
Was it Draftster, and they would disappear, and they'd be like, okay, I guess I'll play LeBron for the minimum.
Well, FanDuel's basically doing that this year, all but the tip-top guys.
So
here, guys.
Weird.
Like, it's like these guys just come back at 2,000. Like, unless you're like Trout or something like someone like that, really just anyone from the next tier and all the way down just comes back at the minimums. It's broken.
It's called they're just bored and they're not actively maintaining the algorithm anymore, and just like the algorithm is like, well, I guess this guy's not playing. Like, it's...
Yeah,
it's kind
crazy.
Of irresponsible.
If you start high enough, I guess you don't get all the way down. But anyway, Belt's still only 2,700. This guy's an excellent, excellent hitter, especially against righties. So he should be hit second in the lineup. I don't love the rest of the lineup here, but as a one-off at 2,700 on FanDuel, I'm all about Belt. All right, what other bad pitchers we got going here? I got a few more on my list.
Yeah, I got some on my list too. I mean, after the ones we've already listed, it kind of turns into a more... Well, I'll take it back. There's one guy that's still ahead of the class when it comes to being bad. Compared to some of the rest of these guys. I don't know. There's actually a pile of guys that are very bad today. So I'm going to keep bobbing and weaving in all different directions on my analysis here. Dan Straley is the guy. He's going up against the Nats. Again, if you don't play Scherzer, it's really easy to start just stuffing your lineup with Nats. Really, really good ones. Straley right now, his walks per nine, I'll like never understand what happens with guys like this, but his walks per nine are touching 5. And to stay on the mound, I just don't even know how the manager... can stomach it. Like, you're like,
well, you play for the Marlins. You play for the Marlins.
Yeah, I guess.
Else,
right. It's like, you look at the boat, you're like, all right, I've seen enough Australia walking guys. Who do we got? Is that right?
Oopsies.
Never mind. Oopsies, no, Dan, go back out there. No, I was just itching my nose. No, I'm not coming out. You're fine. But yes, Australia's terrible. I mean, sub 8 Ks per 9, 4.6 walks per 9, giving up tons of home runs. The ground ball rate is as low as ever. And he's a guy who, you know, ground ball rate, like I said with Scherzer, doesn't always translate into home runs. Strelley is just on lock, 1.5 home runs per nine, three straight seasons now, more than 500 innings now of 1.5 plus home runs per nine. Just huge upside coming in for the Nationals here. And again, if you can afford them, you're going to see some really solid GPP and probably cash game plays too. So
yeah, I think Adam Eaton's actually a guy I wrote up. He on FanDuel, another guy that's just mispriced, 2,700 against Strelley. He's in 100% of lineups right now. He does not take, it's funny because he doesn't do really anything, but he gets on base. He doesn't take walks and he doesn't hit home runs and he actually doesn't steal any bases once he's on there. Not doing a great job selling him here, but he gets on base like 37% of the time, even with, and that's really tough to do if you don't take walks. So he's just a contact guy through and through. And so a lot of his really upside or just even floor is derived from just getting to first and then having one of the many great guys behind him knock him in. And so that's a little of a tight wire act to play because you're just not giving yourself a lot of outs. No pun intended there. You're not giving yourself a lot of ways to create the points. And yet still, I think he's still consistent enough that at 2,700, yeah, it's completely good to go.
What was the pun, by the way? I'm lost.
Oh, I said outs, but he wasn't making outs.
What do you mean?
Shut up. Okay, whatever. So... A couple other guys we have here. Minnesota is going up against, I think they're going against Matt Boyd still. They hit Sano and Forsythe 2-3. Forsythe had a huge game last night at near the minimums. He went 5-for-5. I could see him. He's at 2,500 again on FanDuel. I could see people playing him against Matt Boyd. Sano has been horrible, but he's hit three home runs in his last seven games. Maybe there's some sign that it's starting to turn around here. I don't really know. The pressure's off maybe because the Twins, he's stunk all year. The Twins have traded off all their guys. There's no expectations anymore. I think I rarely try to put that stuff on guys because I think it's foolhardy to try to chase the mental game in terms, especially in terms of projections. But I do get sort of encouraged when, I don't know, the team shifts. There's some guys kind of turned it around. He's striking out less. I don't know. He had two whole games in a row where he didn't strike out, which seems like a little feather in his cap. So I do like some of these Twins coming cheap against Matt Boyd. The rest of their team is kind of garbage, but Forsythe and Sano strike me as two guys you can pretty easily, especially if you're playing Scherzer, slot into your lineups and feel pretty good. Sub 3,000 near the top of the lineup against a bad arm. Give us one more before we get out of here because we're going to start to run over time here.
Yeah, I'll give you a little bit of a list here because there really are a long list of guys you can target today. One situation I just want to highlight mostly because it's pretty hilarious is the James Shields situation. So Shields today favored again. He's now been favored multiple times in the last few weeks and the line's just come down. It's come down to 8.5. I don't totally get, I mean, the Royals, yeah, they can't hit. They don't have good players on the team. The White Sox going the other way the same way. So it is what it is. But like James Shields, you have to have some kind of gumption to be in Vegas right now and project Shields for a win. The guy's got an xFIP north of 5 once again, three straight years on that. And even if you're going by more conventional metrics, he's 4-14 this season. Like this guy who's 6-19 two seasons ago. Like the guy is just bad. Just does not put the team in a position to win by virtue of being such a bad pitcher. But favored against Jacob Junis and the Royals. So anyway, two bad pitchers going in this game. Not great lineups. But if you're looking for those offbeat stacks, I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times, you can get those random games. Even bad teams will occasionally put up huge numbers when the pitching matchup is right. And I think this game kind of smacks of that to me. I think, you know, you've also got Mike Minor going today. Again, not the worst pitcher on the slate. And the Angels, or I guess really a major theme of this slate, just writ large, is some pretty darn bad pitchers going against some pretty bad offenses. So I think for big tournaments, it wouldn't shock me at all if just one of these teams catches lightning in a bottle. You got some of these right-handed bats for the Angels. It's Justin Upton night randomly, or Pujols happens to find one, or, you know, like there could be some weird stuff. So just keep your eye out because I think for cash games, things are looking fairly straightforward at this point. For big tournaments, I think you could see guys coming out of nowhere. So if that's the kind of night you like for big tournaments, awesome. If you don't, then I would stay away tonight.
I'm going to say one thing about Shields before we get out of here. Shields is the one guy of the group of pitchers that I think are just like in that sort of borderline to heavy bum territory. He is the one guy that I wrote up Duda, so you can easily play, you know, Duda, Alex Gordon, these guys at the top lineup, I think you can easily stack against them. He's the one guy of the group that I actually, if you're going deeper in GBPs and making many lineups, he's actually the one guy that I would actually throw in and actually roster, because he
Hold
does...
Hold on a second.
Oh, I'm going to make the case. Hold on 1 second. I knew this was going to extend the podcast if I said this, but whatever. He's the one guy of this group that actually does have the good game in him, from time to time. So I'm going to give you, this is his last five games. 7 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 Ks. 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 6 Ks. You'll take the, at 6,300, you'll love, and I didn't get the win in either, but you'll love that kind of production at his price. 7 innings, 8 Ks, did give up 4 earned runs. 4 innings, 7 Ks. He has the K stuff at times in him. 7 innings, 1 earned run, 5 Ks. Like, there's, that's 4 of his last 5 games that you would easily, you'd happily take at his price point. 6 2/3 with 7 Ks, 2 earned runs. Now he has like the, he has the 8 earned run game on him, and he has the 6 earned run game on him. He has bad games in him, but of that group, he, this guy does have good pitching performances in him. 7 innings, 5 Ks. This is just, I'm just, that was just less than his last 10 games. Like, he is sort of like, he's the guy that has gotten epically blown up at times because he's just not all that good, but he does have the good game in him, and the Royals are so bad. So I think among the, that's my only case for, do I think he's a cash game pitcher? No. Do I think it's more often not going to work than it will? Probably. But from a GPP standpoint, at 6,300, the Royals are bad enough. He's shown just enough ability to go long enough in games with some Ks that I would be fine stacking against him, and I would be fine taking, if I'm putting in 50 lineups, you know, having him in, you know, 4% of them or something like that. I don't know. Did I make enough of a case?
Yeah, case made, dude. I mean, looking at his game log, I'm seeing these fantasy point totals. I don't think you want him out there in cash, but a guy at 6,300 who has touched 26 fantasy points, 24 fantasy points, sure, I could see it.
Oh my God, I swayed you. All right, well, on that
24 fantasy points against these same Royals, by the way.
There you go. So James Shields
actually two starts in July against them. The other one, 19 fantasy points. Okay.
Oh, buddy, I'm feeling great. The rest of the day kind of made. I might take the rest of the day off. DFSR.com/MLB is the site. Go over there, get started. You can check out all of the tools we have going up there. One thing I did not mention about our new update, and it's probably too late in the podcast, we'll mention it again next podcast as well, is that in addition to the, you know, the limit players, we now have multiple sets of projections per slate. We have our normal sort of like weighted mean projections. We also have floor projections and upside projections for batters and hitters. So if you're targeting a little bit more, maybe more safety, if you're targeting a little bit more upside, you can toggle between different sets of projections to kind of just whatever your flavor is. So go check that out. That's in one of the drop down menus as well. So really excited about what we got going on here. That will be there for football as well. Already started incorporating it based on some standard deviation stuff. So a lot of stuff going on. DFSR.com/MLB will get you started. Buddy, enjoy your weekend. Talk to you early next week.
Peace.